This is CICK News. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Dan Messick. Each week, we provide an update about events and issues developing right across Northwest BC. CICK Smithers Community Radio is on the dial at 93.9 FM, or you can listen online at smithersradio.com or subscribe to our podcast. CICK News broadcasts from unceded Ginamden Territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Today on CICK News, we speak with Joy Thorkelson. She's with the United Allied Fishermen's Workers Union in Prince Rupert. They called out the Federal Department of Fisheries and Oceans recently after they closed the marine commercial harvest of Skeena sockeye on August 7th. They pointed out that more than 4 million sockeye returned to the Skeena system this year, and it is the sixth largest sockeye run in the past century, and that shutting down the marine commercial harvest put the livelihoods of hundreds of families at risk and jeopardized the mere existence of the tiny commercial fleet still in operation on BC's north coast. Thorkelson doesn't mince words, and after meeting with the Provincial Minister of Land, Water, and Resource Stewardship, Josie Osborne, about whether they support DFO's decision to close the marine commercial harvest this season, Thorkelson feels that a better approach and a more transparent process to implementing fisheries closures and other management practices is well overdue on the West Coast. But first, dozens gathered outside the RCMP detachment in Smithers last night to hold a candlelight vigil for Barrett Jax. Jax was taken into custody by RCMP on September 1st in connection with an investigation and was to be held in custody until his court appearance on September 6th. However, on Sunday, September 4th, around 8:55 p.m., during a cell check, according to an RCMP press release, Jax was found in a medical distress due to self-inflicted actions. Medical treatment was provided and emergency service were called, but after being transported to the hospital, Jax was later pronounced deceased. The Independent Investigation Office of BC has been notified and is investigating the situation and the actions of police. We will keep you up to date as this story continues to develop. Now we take you to Prince Rupert and our conversation with Joy Thorkelson.
You know, we met with the minister. Our concerns, union's concerns, aren't so much with the Alaskan fishermen. That is a Pacific Salmon Treaty issue, and we have people who are on the Pacific Salmon Commission, and the Americans have to account for their catches. You know, certainly is annoying when the Alaskans who are not under treaty after the beginning of August are able to impact both Fraser stocks and Skeena and Nav stocks, at least the fishery I shouldn't say all Alaskan fisheries, but the fishery in District 101, which is the largest fishery on Skeena, sockeye in particular. We also have, Americans also have a, sorry, that's District 104. Americans also have a fishery in District 101, which is a, which mainly impacts mass fish. And, but it's the district, it's in District 104 that majority of Skeena sockeye are caught in the American fishery. The majority of fish caught in the American fishery are caught in District 104. So I mean, it's certainly annoying that we have not been able to bring them under the treaty after August 1st. But that was not the reason for the closure on the Skeena or the reason for the closure on the Fraser, and it was certainly not the reason for no openings occurring for the commercial fleet on the Nass. So that's what we were talking to the minister about, is really where the province wants to see the commercial fishing industry in British Columbia goes. It's quite clear that the federal government is trying to get rid of the commercial fishery, the marine commercial fishery. Salmon fishery in British Columbia. They've done an excellent job this year because of because they won't manage to in a scientific manner. DFO just shut fisheries down, refused to let us open early and shut fisheries down later on in the season while there was still a number of fish to be caught on the Skeena. In fact, 2 million fish to be caught yet on the Skeena. So, you know, that's what we wanted to talk about, is where is the provincial government, where does the provincial government line up? And, you know, is the provincial government supporting the federal government's decision to get rid of the commercial, the marine commercial salmon fishery? And if not, then what can we do to work together to make sure that, you know, there are sustainable marine fisheries on this coast, that a fisheries-based program is developed to ensure that the marine fleet can remain viable. What does a marine fleet look like in the future? How are we going to determine, you know, when a marine fishery should take place? So those are the things that we want to talk to the minister about. Plus, we want to talk to the minister about labor force adjustment. Obviously, the fleet has gone from in the early 2000s, DFO cut the fleet in half between 1996 and 2000. The fleet was reduced by 50%. And so 2000 to now, the fleet has been reduced by another, I don't know this year's numbers, but I would, up to 2018, it was, the fleet was reduced by another two-thirds. So there is only a tiny fleet left in British Columbia. And do we think that's a sufficient fleet to keep the fishing infrastructure going on? What is going on with processing? Is all our processing of salmon now going to be done in the United States and in Asia, or in Alaska and in Asia? And so, you know, what our marine communities what is the future for marine communities in the fishing industry? So we didn't have a whole long time to speak. I probably talked for 15 minutes already, and we only had a half an hour with the minister at that time. But we are going to be speaking with her more in the future.
I guess, Joy, obviously, I just want to kind of bring attention to one thing. You know, here we saw one of the largest, or the largest, sockeye run in the past 20 years or so.
No. Let's get this straight. This is the sixth largest run in 100 years. Let's get this straight, okay? It's not just one of the largest runs. It is the largest run in 20 years, and it is the sixth largest run in 100 years.
In the last century. Yeah, in the last century. And I was just going to note that from the info that the union sent me, the sixth largest Skeena River sockeye run in 100 years was closed only after 650,000 sockeye were caught to allow the escapement of 3.4 million, which according to the information sent by the union, 3.5 times the required escapement of 900,000 sockeye, and the commercial fishing rate was only 16%. Of the return to Canada of the 1.4 million. So what was the reason? Seeing all these fish, obviously, you know, there was some fishing opportunities, but very limited. What was the reason that the feds, as well as the provincial government, has given you the reason why we need to close, or made these decisions to close these fisheries?
Well, nobody has given us a reason that actually is a science-based reason. Local DFO says it's because the minister has decided that fisheries have to be managed in a more risk-adverse way. And so local DFO managers determined that, on their own, determined that a more risk-adverse way would be to shut down the commercial fishery. There was no discussion with us pre-season on what they wanted to be more risk-adverse about. because there's many different ways of being risk adverse. There are many different things you can do to avoid different species of fish, or to curtail your fishing at a certain time. Those were never discussed with us. We asked again and again and again and again, what fish do we need to save? What fish do we need to be more risk adverse on? And we could not get an answer. And that's part of the frustration, is because we don't know. And so DFO just said, okay, to be more risk adverse, we're going to make you all fish in a smaller area. And then we're going to concentrate your effort in a smaller area, and we are going to have you do short sets, short nets, and throw all bycatch over. We're going to, because there's so much fish, the decision was made to fish 2 days on, 1 day off, which was just absolutely backbreaking. And that was one of there's a number of reasons we are only able to catch 650,000 pieces this summer. And one of those reasons was that the fleet could not fish. The fleet is so small, but still the fleet that's left have their own preferences to fish in different areas in the fishing area. So the fishing area is called Area 4. And the ports, lots of ports, some guys from Lac aux Lambs like to fish in Big Bay. Big Bay was closed for a time period. Other guys like to fish out near Eddy Pass or on the outside of the Kinahans or at the airport. Everybody and their nets, their fishing gear is built for the areas they prefer to fish in. Because your gear is very different. Your nets are different colors. Your nets are hung differently. They're hung depending what area you fish in. Your net could be hung like a board flat out, or your net could be hung like a curtain with many folds. The colors are so very different. Somebody should go down and have a look at the myriad of colors that nets are. Either in a net store or online, you can have a look at that, or you can just go down and watch the guys mend their nets. So fishermen weren't fishing in their favored spots. They were boxed into areas where many of them were unused to fishing, or they didn't have the proper gear to fish those areas. And then they were fishing short sets, short nets, in a period where there was no bycatch. And so the question was, where is DFO just trying to give our fleet heart attacks? Most of the fishermen are over 65. The average age is well over 65, my guess is, in the Gillnet fleet now. And so you're asking a bunch of 65-year-olds to set their net and pick it up within 20 minutes. And we had independent observers out there. The independent observers said fishermen were well within that 20-minute period. In fact, most of them were setting for 15 minutes and then bringing their net back in within 15 minutes because they're getting so much fish. They know that their job is to keep bycatch alive, but there was very, very little in the way of bycatch. So DFO had fishermen doing that, and fishermen became tired and just weren't as efficient. And so even though we actually had quite a few days fishing, fishermen weren't efficient. And our fleet is very tiny. There were, I think at the most, there was 130 boats, I think. It declined. Really, it was around 100. Most of the time, it was between 90 and 110. And so you're looking at a very small number of boats fishing in a very small area, but not preferential areas. And you're looking at a fleet that is an aged fleet fishing in a manner that was determined particularly to be able to release coho and steelhead alive when there were very few coho or steelhead around. So it was, and And we didn't know why were we releasing cohos, one of the bigger coho years on the Skeena. Certainly, we nobody wanted to keep steelhead because last year was such a poor steelhead year. This year it turned out that I believe that the steelhead is in the green zone this year. And so we were, and that's one of the reasons that we were, well, that one of the reasons that DFO gave us for stopping a fleet after August 7th was to protect steelhead, to protect coho, protect chum salmon, and to protect particularly, and we can release all of those fish alive, kill very few, catch very few, and kill even fewer the ones that we catch in the gillnet fleet. And the same, the seines will catch more because they don't discriminate in what they catch, but they are very good, have very good higher than gillnet release levels if they, for the fish that they do catch. But they'll catch a greater number of bycatch. The bycatch is higher catch per unit effort than the gillnet fleet, but they have a higher release, live release than gillnet. So they really end up killing about the same number of bycatch numerical. So anyway, the because we didn't have discussions before the season, DFO didn't tell us what they wanted us to avoid or tell us what they wanted to, how they wanted our fisheries to be run. They did it in private on their own, never ran the fishing plan by us whatsoever. And then the other thing they said is they wanted us to avoid late Babeen river wilds. And the late Babeen River wilds did need to be avoided, but their run timing was different than what DFO had said the run timing was. And the late Babeen wilds have not been impacted by the commercial fishery for many, many years. And the late Babeen wilds have really have two issues that are not caused by the commercial fishermen and aren't going to be the problems that they face are not going to be solved by commercial fishermen. The two major problems is that there used to be a I'm not quite sure what it's called, but what it is, it's a fish ladder for fry. So when the sockeye in the Lake Babeen River hatch, they have to swim upstream to get into Lake Babeen Lake, which is where they rear. And to do that, they swim inside eddies to go, because you can imagine trying to swim against a current that is blowing you downstream,
no doubt.
Right? So they have to swim upstream. So they do that by going into the eddies at the side, and the eddies at the side swirl them upstream. That's what eddies do. And there comes a point at the counting fence where there used to be it was like a pipe that was that was corrugated on the bottom. And that created, again, a system where the fry could go up because the current passed the counting fence, which is in the middle of the Babeen River, that creates a barrier. So there's a high number of fry that never make it into the Babeen Lake because the quite a few years ago, that fish fry ladder blew out. There was a big flood and they never replaced it. So that's one of the problems, is they built the counting fence in the middle of this migratory route for fry and have made no attempt now for about the past 10 or 12 years to in fact replace that. And the other thing that those fish have, those sockeye have a problem with, is that they are slowly being replaced by pink salmon. Pink salmon come and and dig up their reds. And they are competing with pink salmon, which never, ever, ever, the pink salmon are colonizing that. Pink salmon are colonizers. Pink salmon are colonizing the Babine River. They weren't seen there. They just started colonizing there maybe in the last 20 years. They weren't seen there prior to that, or not in any number, not in a large number, and they're increasing in size every year, and they're competing. And there's many beliefs by biologists, not by me, because I'm not knowledgeable about that kind of thing, but there are many, many biologists who are saying that the pink salmon are out competing the wild babines for spawning gravel. So anyway, and those things, you can do whatever you want to the commercial fishery. That won't solve those problems. Those problems have to be solved. Yeah. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't think that we should be placing as many fish as we can on the spawning channels. But the latest science shows that those fish can maintain a exploitation rate of 43%, and our exploitation rate was 16. Our exploitation rate was even lower, but our harvest 16%. Rate was 16%. And so we said there is some room here that you should let us fish on the other side of the migration. Let us fish where we're not impacting those fish. We don't need to fish on the peak. We can shut ourselves down for a week when you expect the peak of that run to be. But those discussions could not be had because DFO had made up their mind.
I know, Joy, that these conversations have been frustrating for many years. But after your conversation with the provincial minister, Osborne, what kind of hope do you have for the commercial feed, especially here on the North Coast? And what came out of that meeting in the end of it? Do you feel any more confident that things will change? But as you mentioned, at the beginning of this, that it seems like the commercial marine fleet is dwindling more and more every year. I spoke with a couple of folks at the beginning of the season, before the season, who sold their boats because they were in that, 65 plus bracket and thinking that things weren't going to turn around and now's the time. And it sounds like that's becoming more and more common.
Well, yeah, I don't know if we're going to have a marine fleet or not. The provincial government is not in charge of commercial fishing. The federal government is. But what the provincial government can do, and what we talked to the minister about doing, and what she said she was already doing, was speaking with the Minister of Fisheries and saying, okay, well, what is the goal of the Fisheries Department for the marine commercial fleet? You can't just say you have a goal for fish. You also have to have a goal for the marine commercial fleet. What is the department's goal? And she said, the province is concerned about the workers, which is the fishermen and the shore workers and the tendermen in the commercial fishing industry. Mm-hmm. And she is speaking with the Minister of Fisheries, raising those concerns and asking the Government of Canada, what do they want for a marine commercial fleet? What do they see a marine commercial fleet being in the future? And those are the same questions that we're asking. Everybody's asking the same thing. Is it a Jimmy Patterson owned same fleet that owns the fish through quotas? Is that what, because that's what the environmental movement has created, is it created the only fleet that's going to survive is going to be the Jim Patterson fleet because they have the deepest pockets. And so you're not going to see the First Nations fleet is probably the fleet that's going to go first. It always goes first because they can't raise the capital to stay in the game. So you can see that there's been, if you actually did a study of what happened since the Mifflin Plan in the 90s that reduced the fleet by 50%, you can see that the fleet was reduced and First Nation fishermen have paid the biggest price. It was marine fishermen, but they didn't actually live in marine. The Gixan had, in the 1990s, the Gixan had over 250 commercial fishermen, marine commercial fishermen, 250, over 250. The village of Kitwanga was a commercial fishing village. And the because of the steelhead steelhead battles, and the fact that the river was closed to fishing in August to save steelhead for rich clients of steelhead of steelhead lodges. That's what got rid of the Gixxand commercial fishermen, because they mostly fished in August. They were successful fishermen in August, because because the double licensed marine commercial fleet, the big boats, the boats that were the successful South Coast boats, or even the successful North Coast boats, the big boats, fished on the outside areas of Chatham Sound. They caught lots of sockeye, and by the time the sockeye got to the river, then the Gixxand fleet, which fished it, were river fishermen, saw a smaller run, obviously, because the bigger boats had filtered that out. So when the big boats went down to fish the Fraser, that left a small gillnet of Gixxand riverboat fleet fishing on the river. And so if you looked at their fish books, which I did for many a year, I helped the fleet make sure that the companies hadn't ripped them off by looking at their fish books and at their settlements. I always thought that the first 2 weeks of August were the peak weeks of the Skeena run. And that's because I helped those particular fishermen with their books. And that's when they caught the vast majority of their fish. They didn't catch their fish in July. They caught their fish in August. I mean, they caught some fish in July, but their big money fisheries were in August. And that's what the Steelhead Association shut down on the Skeena River through their belly aching that there was too many fish caught on the Skeena, and the closure of that fishery. So I mean, you know, there's lots of history that goes on, and I'm fairly bitter about it, I have to say. Because I think a lot of people did a lot of damage to fisheries on the Skeena River, and those people will never ever suffer the consequences. And those people probably don't even really know what they did. They just know how they benefited themselves. They don't know what the people they stepped on happened to the people that they stepped on. So anyway, we didn't talk about that, the minister. What we did talk about, though, was what was the provincial government going to press the federal government for in the way of a labor force adjustment plan, so that people who want to get out of the commercial fishery have some adjustment money, similar to what they've done in forestry, which is an early retirement program, which is retraining for those people who want to train for another industry. And that money was put in by the forestry companies, the federal and provincial governments. And we're looking for DFO to set something up on this coast, and they are refusing to do so. So they've said that they're not discussing labor force adjustment with the union. And it's incredible to hear that. And the provincial government is well aware of that and has addressed that issue with the federal government. Now, what the federal government is going to decide to do and is unknowable. And what the provincial government is going to do in the face of whatever the federal government unknowable answer to labor force adjustment and help with either early retirement or help with trying to get people retrained into another sector, and what the vision is going to be for the marine commercial fishery. You can go into Lac aux Lambs and see, you know, that how most of them were double licensed. They're going to go down and fish in the Fraser. And now the Fraser is opening, but it's not opening to gillnets. It's opening to Jimmy's fleet. Jimmy's fleet is what's going to take that, his own boat. Mm. That is what the Department of Fisheries wants, is a handful of boats owned by one or two corporations, because it's so much easier to discuss business with one or two corporations. They have a corporately owned fleet, and this myth that gillnetters are non-selective, in fact, that's entirely wrong. The gillnetters invest money into so many nets so they can be selective, because they don't want to catch fish that A, they're not allowed to catch, or B, aren't going to make them any money, right? So their nets are highly selective. They're built to catch the species they want to catch. So when they want to catch spring salmon, they fish with an 8 3/4 net or 8 1/4 net. When they want to fish with chums, they fish for 5 1/2. They want to fish for sockeye, and they know it's a 4-year-old. The run comes in as 4-year-olds, small 4-year-olds, and they'll make their net. They'll fish with 4 3/4 or 4 1/2 if they want to fish. If the fish come in on a larger Nass fish, then they might fish 5 1/4. They fish the nets that give them the highest catch of their target species. So they are the most selective deer. And the question is, could we adapt our fishing methodology in order to release bycatch alive? And they have, and the average kill of steelhead is less than 10%. That's what the average mortality rate is of steelhead that are caught and brought on board a gill net, is 10%. The average mortality rate of coho is less than 18%. And that's of the fish that are brought on board. Now, both those species, when they're large, they just bust through the net, so they're not even caught. They just break. The fishermen find a hole in their net, and those fish have gone through. They either go under the net, over the net, or right through the net, and fishermen find lots of holes in their nets, and that's because their nets are not built to catch those heavy fish.
I guess, Joy, just the last thing for you quickly, you know, if there was something to be done that would, you know, increase the numbers of boats, or at least bring some sustainability to the marine commercial fleet, you know, in the interim and then in the next, you know, years to come, what would that be, or what is your hope that would be?
Well, we put a plan together before we knew about PISI, because we knew the commercial. We all you had to do was look at ocean survival and see that we are going to have to do something different in British Columbia if we're going to have a marine fleet, and the fleet was going to have to be smaller. It was going to have to be have some surety of access. It was going to have some Alaska style small hatchery, short stream hatchery production that we were going to have to put some money into. So what happened is, we in 2019, we called together anybody who is in the commercial fishing industry, fishermen, active fishermen, to a meeting. By Zoom, and 150 fishermen showed up, and that they weren't, the majority of them were probably not union, although we didn't do a roll call. People signed in and I looked at them, and I think the majority were not union. Whether that matters or not, I don't know, but they were all active fishermen. That's what you had to be in that meeting. And those fishermen put together a plan, an action plan, and we submitted that report to everybody we could possibly submit that report to, and I can send it to you. It's a report on the future of commercial salmon fishing, and it calls on a whole number of things, because we don't believe that there's just one thing that's a problem, right? It calls on a whole number of things. Now, some of it needs to be more specific. And so the union has also developed some more specific plans within those, because those are very wide plans, and not all of them were. We tried to reflect everybody's views, and so we have said the majority of fishermen wanted this, but some fishermen wanted that in order to reflect everybody's views. So when everybody saw that report, that who was at the meetings, they would see that their that the union accurately reflected what fishermen were saying, that everybody's viewpoint was presented. And but there was a majority viewpoint, and so what we did is we presented that majority viewpoint as being a majority viewpoint, because most fishermen know what needs to happen to make them viable. Although there were some other ideas that came up that were good ideas that fishermen felt were certainly worth developing, but were not developed. And so the union spent some time developing some of those other ideas, and but they're not part of the report. The report has gone out without the development of those ideas. I can send it to you if you like. Mm-hmm. But yes, we have done that. And we've presented to DFO and asked DFO for a discussion about it. They have never had a discussion about it, although they are admitting that it is the only report that has a goal in it, that it has a goal in where we should go, what should happen to the commercial fleet. You know, and it doesn't have to be our report, but there should be, somebody should have an idea of where this bus is going. I mean, if it's going over a cliff and DFO wants to get rid of the entire marine commercial fishery, they should just come out and say that. And then we can have a public policy debate about that. If they want to say we only want a fleet owned by Jim Pattison, then we should have the public policy debate about that. But they aren't saying that. They aren't saying anything. They aren't saying what their goal is. And the provincial government has asked them what their goal is.
Joy, I think we'll leave it there for now. That's quite a lot to unpack, but we thank you so much for your insight. Obviously, this continues to be a frustrating situation as we watch, you know, the numbers of the commercial fleet on the coast dwindle, especially in a year like this. But I know that you have a deep history here and passion and connection to fish and those people who work in that industry. And so this won't be the last time that we talk. But I thank you so much for giving me your time today.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.